Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
And welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Good Friday morning to you. It's Friday, It's finally Friday. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. That's how we interact. We will discuss a number of things, interesting things that have popped up on the radar this morning, dealing with politics. So stick around for that. Coming up on the program, Todd Stacey in about a half hour. From Alabama Daily News and Capital Journal. He's had kind of a busy week, I guess. At least it's not session, so he'll be with us. Scott Stathagen of the Alabama Republican Party. And then our do-over appearance, the makeup appearance yesterday, but our Thursday regular, April Murray Fogle, in the 11 o'clock hour. We'll see what she's got to say. If you're interested in that, once again, text line 251-343-0106. We'll kick it off here. So yesterday at the conclusion of this program, I made my way about 3 miles, 2 miles away from the Fairhope Bureau to the Fairhope Yacht Club, where I moderated a, well, it was supposed to be a forum for Secretary of State candidates. It turned out to be a forum for a Secretary of State candidate, our friend Carolyn Dobson. She was the only candidate to show. I think Chris Horn, maybe one other guy is running, but a Republican, Eastern Shore Republican Women's Club, always great to catch up with those guys. But that wasn't there was an undercurrent of, man, what's going to happen in AL1? Who's going to run? And the rumor mill is red hot right now. Our returning champion name came up quite frequently, Chris Elliott. Would he run against Jerry Carl? This is hypothetical. I don't know. I don't have any unique insight here that's not already out there. But this is, as we do on this show, we baselessly speculate from time to time. What's going to happen here? Some of these guys who were very much contenders in this first congressional district, the way it was drawn previously, are going to have a hard time. The special election, August 11th. Be careful what you ask for. But it becomes suddenly more complicated. So let's just recap in case you haven't followed along. You're probably aware, Louisiana Calais struck down parts of the Voting Rights Act, struck down the parts that, for some reason, have been interpreted to mean that you have to create a congressional district. Your congressional districts must be in line with the proportion of your race demographics, which is not really, as the court said, no, you don't do that. You don't split up communities of interest for the sake of creating proportionate representation. We're supposed to all exist within our community of interest, regardless of our skin color. That's the concept. So nonetheless, they ruled you could agree or disagree. I know a lot of you who like to listen to the show disagree, but too bad. It's the law of the land now, and you're not going to win. It's over. The Alabama legislature, the governor, drag kicking and screaming, calls the legislature into a special session to devise some contingency plans. Alabama's under this injunction from 2023 that told them they are not allowed to draw any new maps until 2030 or do anything regarding redistricting, and where the court is able to impose that sort of mandate is very strange, but they went along with it. Well, last week, the Supreme Court, they vacate these orders, remand back down to the lower court. They had to hear it all over again and completely, entirely new evidence, new witnesses, start from scratch, as if the lawsuit were just filed. Which means, hey, you guys could go ahead and do what you were going to do all along. We'll figure it out later. So we go back to what the legislature set up in their special session for the 2023 map to be put in place. To do this, you got to have special elections. You can't do it. It's too quick to have done for May 19th or June or what the governor did in her proclamation calling for a special election. She said on May 20th, 21st and 22nd will be the qualifying window. You qualify with your party to run in this special election. So 3 days next week, at the day after, beginning the day after our primary election, we vote for everything else. And how many people are really out there like, I thought the election was postponed to August 11th. There's a real fear here that maybe it's honest. I don't know. That the public is going to get confused because they aren't going to thoroughly read the news accounts, the four or five paragraphs before them, to tell them that the May 19th election is not canceled. There's just an additional election. But that seems to be a fear. Nonetheless, we'll have May 19th, and we'll talk about that some. Statewide elections, legislative, some judgeships, etc. And then a new election cycle begins the day after, independent of the ongoing one, which will have some primary runoffs. And you get to thinking about it, you're going to have 75% of these candidates who are running for something out of a job, out of an occupation, out of what they have been dedicating their life to for the last year and a half. What are they going to do? Hey, you could run for Congress. So we'll have, separate from everything else, congressional elections for four congressional districts, four of the seven congressional districts in Alabama, our own first congressional district, newly drawn, which includes everybody, most everybody in this listing area, unless you're listing of Florida or Mississippi. That's Covington County, Escambia County, Baldwin, Mobile counties. And then you got the second, which is the old Wiregrass district. It's Montgomery down to the Florida state line, the old Florida short route. And the sixth congressional district, which is primarily the Birmingham suburbs, and the seventh congressional district, which is Birmingham and the Black Belt. And it gets down, I believe, Washington, Clark County. So some of you in this listening audience may be in the seventh. So this is what you got now. You got Republican-leaning districts, and you're going to have a brand new slate of candidates, entirely different from what you've been hearing. So in the first, Jerry Carl is the front runner. He has been running. He's raised the most money. He's got the best infrastructure. He has a lot of the local support. However, he's got the potential here for a challenger. And you start looking around, who would run? And suddenly you hear a lot of buzz about the returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. Now, Elliott's put out a statement on this. He's sort of denied it. He says he's focused on his Tuesday election against Mike Vann. Mike Vann is the one trying to make some hay out of this. Hey, why vote for this guy? He's going to run for Congress. Vote for me. I don't think that's going to work, but why not try, right? Also, real quick, 2nd Congressional District, Joshua McKee, who you've heard on the show multiple times, he is running in the 2nd against Rep. Marcus. And maybe Rhett's got some problems. Maybe he put too much time and effort into Baldwin County and didn't really shore up the home base, but he is running over there. I would watch the 6, and I'm going to bring this up. I think Gary Palmer could have a challenger. What if the Senate election goes with Marshall and Barry Moore and it's really close? Watch Jared Hudson. If he doesn't get in the runoff, he could run against Gary Palmer. 7th, I don't know what's going to happen there. And still keep this in mind, there's still a push underway. I don't think it'll be successful, but there's still a push underway to try to get a 7-0 map. And I'm told it's coming from the White House. I don't know. There may be some candidates who want to run as Republicans in the 7th Congressional District who are kind of trying to create the perception that that's going on. But man, be careful what you ask for. You may get it. And here we got it. I know there's a formality that the lower courts have to green light it, but they're not stupid. They're not going to stand in the way of the Supreme Court and have themselves embarrassed again. So it's like this crazy political election silly season in the middle of an election cycle, which will make your head explode. It ought to make your head explode. But I expect a crowded field. I think there'll be more than just Jerry Carl and the guys who've already announced they're running. Austin Sidwell. It's a free shot on goal. And I guess there's a question, can you be a nominee and run for another office? Which we'll have to figure that out. But I don't see why not. There's nothing in the rules against it. Text line 251-343-0106. Get in touch with the program. We'll pick it up on the other side. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Comfort, carry on. Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text me, and we'll do our best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. So come on to program here in just a bit, here in about 5-10 minutes or so. We'll hear from Todd Stacey at Alabama Daily News. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Let's get to the text line here. Ba-ba-la-ba-la. Got it open. Jeff, can you ask Todd Ivey if an Alabama congressman lives In Bethesda, which of the new Alabama districts should he run for Congress in? Well, I'll say this to you. I think Shamari Figures is now a resident of Alabama. I think it was a house in Montgomery. But I think this happened like right at the last minute when he decided he was going to run in the in that race. Let's see what else we got here. Bupla. Tony writes, can you explain why Mississippi Governor is not going to have a special session? Well, we'll see. We'll see if over time that they come around here and get that done. Let's see. I don't know. I honestly, I'm so immersed in Alabama, I should do a better job keeping up with Mississippi and that. Is that the Mike Vann, the same Mike Vann that had Mike Vann Chevrolet dealership at Bay Minette about 20 years ago? That I don't know. Now, I know Sandy Sansing is, he was a work there. So very well may be. Damn Yankee, great question, Mr. Poor. Who's going to run against Jerry Carl? I think a bright golden retriever could beat him. I mean, there's this perception out there among a lot of talkers and not yours included that he's a weak candidate, that Jerry Carl is weak. Now, Jerry Carl's got some problems he's never been confronted with. He's got a United States senator working against him at the time she was working for another candidate. She was pushing Rhett Marcus. And the way that works, I mean, it's not so much that that her endorsement's going to swing a lot of votes. But I'd say this about it. I think that, her supporters, she will kind of steer them toward whoever she tells, who she wants to be in that office, which would include... at the time, included Rhett Marcus. And that was kind of a problem somewhat for Congressman Carl, former Congressman Carl. Wish you get behind somebody else this time, this special election, and that's kind of an outlying question. I can tell you that whole sordid ordeal, Jerry Carl loses to Barry Moore on a Tuesday, I think on a Thursday. They go back up to Washington, D.C. There's an omnibus bill on the table that the Senate concocted. They send it back down to the House. A lot of Republicans voted against it, but it took Democrat votes to pass. The entire delegation, the Republican delegation, including Tommy Tuberville, voted against it, except for Katie Brick, because she's on the committee that authored it. And she was wanting Jerry Carl to vote along for it. He voted against it. And there's that sort of set in place a series of events to, I guess, make Katie Brick think she needs to back someone else in a congressional election. So we'll see how that goes. 251-343-0106. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Still to come on the program, Scott Steinhagen, the Alabama Republican Party chairman. He's got an event on Mondays to come on and promote. Also, April Murray Fogle from 1819 News, a site you may have heard of, making her makeup appearance, I guess. We had to move her around yesterday to accommodate some other guests. So that's coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. Joining us now, we do this on Fridays. He is the host of Capital Journal, also the publisher of Alabama Daily News and Inside Alabama Politics. But Todd Stacey is with us. Todd, how are you?
I'm great, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for coming on. Well, it's been kind of a whirlwind here, and I, you know, just nothing really surprises me at this point. I mean, what else could happen? Who knows? And it's probably just shrug it off. But this election cycle, and then you got a special election within an election, and I think this special election, with qualifying being the day after the primary, it's going to be a congressional cycle that's going to be wild, because I think people are still going to have the bug, and you're going to see a lot of people run.
I think you're right. And, you know, the dust is really just now settling, if it has at all, in terms of, you know, wow, this is really happening. I mean, you know, Calais came out a little more than 2 weeks ago. They've had a special session. The governor's called these special elections. I mean, all this has happened very quickly, so quickly that it's not really enough time to consider, like, hey, I might want to run for Congress, something I've been thinking about for a while, but I wouldn't do it the way the districts are currently drawn, but maybe I would. So, yeah, I agree that those decisions are starting to be made. I think you're going to see people jump into races that maybe, you know, are unexpected. It's not going to be a quiet election. That means May 19th. It also means August 11th. Of course, we're sitting here talking about it, Jeff, but I mean, we're still waiting on that Northern District Court to speak. I mean, there's some kind of chance that they could have some other kind of injunction and really throw a wrench into things. I don't know how soon we're going to see that. Mondays tend to be the days that these decisions come out. I mean, can you imagine if they came out with something on Monday, the day before the election, that threw another wrench into it? I mean, like you said, nothing surprises us at this point, and that actually could happen.
But the anticipation, particularly from, you know, legislators and the governor's office, that if they do that, the Supreme Court will just step in and green light everything that they kind of, I mean, they would they have done all this without some kind of idea that there's going to be at least a path cleared for them to do what they're doing?
Yeah, and that's my assumption too. But I guess that's the thing, is I'm kind of starting to throw out assumptions at this point, because
you're right.
What do I know? And how long does it take? Does it take a day, an emergency docket kind of thing, or does it take a week? I mean, even a week at this point, in terms of qualifying the election calendar, primary, all that, even a week would really make things difficult. So now, like I said, I fully anticipate everything's going to go according to this plan, and that's fine. And I kind of view it as like almost like a technicality. But again, every time I start to assume something in this crazy situation, I'm proven wrong. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah, you're right. But it just, if we're betting it, you think you'd have to go across state line to do that. You got to feel like that's, they have a good idea of what's going to happen. And I guess we'll just operate on the assumption that things will kind of go as planned. But the question we haven't quite nailed down is, if you win your primary on the 19th, can you keep your nomination and still run for Congress and run for another office nomination in the same party?
You mean like if you're running for like state legislature and you're nominated? That,
yes, and then you want to run for Congress. And if you lose, you November 3rd comes, you're still running for state house or senate.
Yeah. Well, you're right, because, okay, let's say you're running for statewide office and don't make the runoff, same kind of thing. I'm not a lawyer, but my understanding is that what the rule is you can't appear on the same ballot. Like, your name can't appear on the same ballot twice. You can't run for two offices at the same time. The August 11th will be a different ballot.
Yeah, so, this is a separate election completely.
Right. So I think that would be fine. But, I mean, goodness gracious, that'll be litigated until the cows come home. But I do think, I definitely think you're going to see people, whether, you know, win or lose, run for Congress in these new districts that are, yes, running for other offices currently.
Yeah, and I, you know, that's what makes this intriguing. But everybody's kind of focused on one and two, and maybe you would have some other Democrats take a look at it because the lines have changed. I think Gary Palmer's going to have a serious challenger now. I really agree. Do. Yeah, I think, I mean, the one thing, you know, should Jared Hudson not make the runoff for U.S. Senate, I mean, I think he's got a real shot. I think he would run. And all these guys, this is the thing, we can leave names out of it, but you're kind of running at peak performance. You got your name ID up. You got everything you've been working on for the last year and a half. You take an L on Tuesday. You could play in, like, it's like the NIT or something. You know, it's not the office you want, but you get new life, and you still have the infrastructure. I mean, come up with some qualifying money. Why not try?
Yeah. The only tough part about that is that it's really easy to take federally raised money and run for state office. You can't do the opposite. You can't take your state funds. I guess you can take like $1,000, but like you can't. If you raised money for a state office, there's basically unlimited restrictions, but federal, they have pretty strict restrictions. And so raising money becomes a little bit of an issue. So self-funders, you know, have an advantage there. I agree. I think you're going to see that. But you know what? It's so crazy. Everything that's happening is just kind of wild. Never a dull moment, Alabama politics. But, you know, we still have an election on Tuesday. And, like, that Senate race is hot. I mean, we don't know, based on the polling, it is neck and neck who's going to get into that runoff. Same thing for Attorney General. I mean, that's a huge race. I mean, right now we don't know who's going to get in that runoff. So, I mean, there's a lot at stake on Tuesday. It's going to be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, the Tuesday election, you and I have talked about this over the last few weeks. And, you know, just talking to these guys who do these daily tracking polls, there are still an unusually high number of undecideds up for grabs. So, and I was talking to a consultant about this, and the way he told me is like, look, you know, if you're not decided and you're saying you're a likely voter, you're probably not a likely voter, you know, this late. I mean, you may think of yourself as a likely voter. Yeah, you're going to go vote in November, but in a Republican primary, you're just not. If you're undecided and you haven't made up your mind this late in the game, there's a good chance that you're not going to show up to vote on Tuesday.
Yeah, and you know, in our latest round of polling, that was a struggle, right? The biggest struggle that pollsters have is determining who's likely to vote, because it's different. You can just poll registered voters all you want, but that doesn't matter. Those numbers don't matter. You've got to poll likely voters. But I will say, like, some of the screening questions worked in terms of like, oh, are you going to vote by mail, or, you know, absentee, or are you going to vote in person? And so you kind of get to screen them out a little bit. So I think we did a signal. The polling company did a pretty good job of finding them. And one of the telltales is like the governor's race. I mean, like, everybody said, yeah, I'm going to vote, or I guess it was 68-69% saying, yeah, I'm going to vote for Tuberville. So like they're in there. But I think that's part of the problem, is that there's no big race for governor, you know, a big primary for governor that people kind of tune into, because that's the big one. I mean, you would think that people would, you know, appreciate the fact that we have an open U.S. Senate seat, arguably a bigger deal. But because there's no top of the ticket, like, hey, there's this big race for governor, we're all engaged in it, I do think just folks haven't tuned in as much as maybe they tend to in election years.
Yeah, and that's the Senate race. These guys who are running, there's something that's off about these campaigns and the messaging and making people, like, lock in on them. And I was talking to somebody about this. It might have been Michael Lowry, and he and I were talking, mm-hmm. and it was, you know, like, There seems to be a playbook that's being used by a lot of these campaigns, and it's just not hitting right. It's off target somewhat. And maybe it's the way we consume media now. Maybe it's where things are going. And, you know, there's all these different factors. But what they haven't adapted to is the this day and age of media and hitting the right voter and figuring it out, especially when you have, like, algorithms and they can really pinpoint your demographic and your likes and wants and needs. And for some reason in politics, they haven't quite figured that out in Alabama. And you know, that is what we speculated, I guess, is that, you know, that somebody's got to do some evaluation here and figure out why isn't this connecting like it used to?
Yeah. And let me be the first to say, I mean, I would be completely lost. Now, I worked in campaigns for a while, but I would not know where to begin in today's environment, like you said, with all the different media and everything. But you're right. And, you know, one of the observations that Michael made in Alex's story on the Senate race is that, like, all take Barry Moore. I mean, for all the money that he has raised and spent and all the money that's been spent on his behalf, especially from Club for Growth, if you just total that up, I mean, it's probably in the 10 million range. That usually works. That usually gets you not just into the runoff, but, like, wins the race. And maybe it will ultimately. So, I do think if you just look at the dollar figure and say, man, he should be really doing a lot better. And I think that's fair. Now, maybe I think Barry Moore traditionally has underpolled. And so he may surprise people on Tuesday, but it is kind of interesting to think, like, man, if you had $10 million, you could basically just walk away with a Senate seat. That's conventional wisdom, but it's tougher these days. It's not just getting up on broadcast. You know, you got to do the digital. I don't know how to do that. I mean, and smart consultants do. And so you're right. There's probably going to be a lot of evaluation of what worked and what didn't.
The digital component is so much different because, you know, you think digital, you think like web ads or whatever, but now that everybody's done like cord cutting, I mean, people don't use rabbit ears. Getting up on TV is cost prohibitive, but it's still treated by these campaigns like that's the ultimate, like, that's my ultimate want. That's at the top of my wish list. But Todd, I don't think it really hits anymore because everybody's, like, you know, streaming, you know, even their over-the-air cable, you know, news or whatever. It's YouTube TV. It's all these streaming services that they're getting it through. And then that falls under the category of digital.
Yeah, and I think you're right that the old way of doing things is still around, and that works to an extent. I mean, what they're doing is targeting older voters, and older voters, 65 plus, or you can say 55 plus, whatever, they still watch the news, right? They watch the 10 o'clock news, 6 o'clock news. They watch Wheel of Fortune. You know, they watch right. These shows.
Jeopardy. Yeah. Right.
And so that's what, I mean, it's more expensive to buy Wheel of Fortune than like any other program. But so, yeah, that still works. What I'm interested, though, Jeff, because, all right, we have the TV in our office just always going. Most of the time it's on like WSFA. And any news broadcast now in the election calendar, it's nothing but campaign ads. You know what I'm talking about. It's just nothing but campaign ads. And so people kind of, I think they kind of tune that out. But what I'm interested to see in this Senate race is with all this redistricting, for lack of a better way to say it, everything has been happening legally. Steve Marshall has obviously been outspent and out advertised in this campaign, but he's gotten a lot of earned media because of his involvement in all this stuff. I wonder if that makes a difference in terms, because I do think at this point in the calendar, people tune out ads, but they don't tune out like appearances and actual news. So I'm going to be curious on Tuesday to see if that maybe has an impact. It gives him a bit of a bump.
Yeah. And then, like you said this earlier, I'm Barry Moore always under polls.
Yeah.
I don't know how you account for that. I mean, but you got to, if you're running for Senate and you're running against him, any race he runs in and you're getting polling data, you got to plus it up to at least some degree. He underpolls. It's his type of supporter just doesn't respond to these surveys. They just don't trust them. I don't know what it is. And the same was, the prototype of candidate, that seems to be true for. And it was true when he ran against Coleman, and was true when he ran against Jerry, that he just sort of like surprises people. And at some point, you can't be caught off guard by Barry Moore anymore. It's got to be built in.
Right. So, I mean, I don't think he's got to the point where he's going to avoid a runoff. But I do think, I mean, I guess we had him at like a combined ballot, like 34. I think he'll perform better than that. I think he'll probably be in the 40s.
The Trump endorsement, and I was talking to a lawmaker about this, and the idea here that you know, he's got three endorsed candidates. One is going to win easily, I believe, with Tommy Tuberville. We're you and I are both kind of leaning, at least with the plurality, with Barry Moore. John Wall, he's probably good for the runoff. But it's not really, it hasn't really rocketed him out. And we're talking about this. Does Donald Trump, does he want to take an L here? Does he come in and do something, whatever it is, to try to help his endorsed candidate? That's got to be at least in the back of your head if you're Wes Allen. I don't know, but It's the way he described to me, like kind of too big to fail. And you get the Trump endorsement, and if it's marginal, then maybe something comes out of that that could move the needle. But I'm not sure what that would be.
Yeah, and I guess I would imagine that it's the same in many other states. You know, we're just thinking about Alabama, but I bet there's some like random candidates that Trump endorsed in other states too, that they're trying to figure out what's going on. And that's the thing, like Tuberville was not random, obviously huge Trump supporter, all that, and they're big fans of each other. Barry Moore, same kind of thing. I mean, it was a bit of a surprise because it's a crowded field, but I mean, Barry Moore has been on the Trump train from the very beginning. But the John Wall thing, that was random. Nobody saw that coming. And it's still kind of curious, like why? And I think that's part of the reason it hadn't really caught on. So I guess it's a question of, for Trump, of fish or cut bait. You know,
well, like Mo Brooks, sort of, right?
Right. Which was hilarious, by the way, in the Oval Office, the president's talking about, yeah, I endorsed this other guy, but he wasn't so good, so I got with Katie. I mean, that was like the stream of content. That was hilarious.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and that's what happened. I'm eager to see how that is going to go. Todd, we went a little long here, but folks want to find you online. They want to check your site out. How can they do so?
aldailynews.com. And remember, Capital Journals tonight, we're going to be talking about all things elections. So tune in tonight, 7:30 on APT.
Todd, Stacey, Lizzie, and Todd, thanks again.
All right, Jeff, be good.
All right, we'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
This WKRG News Update is brought to you by Arrow Exterminators. Stop termites and pests before they attack. Schedule a free pest inspection today. Call 888-GO-ARROW or visit arrowexterminators.com.
Class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles, kind of making small talk, killing time.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning, 251-343-0106. Mommy issues with maternity clinics continuing to close across Alabama, while more than 600,000 Alabamans remain uninsured. And you sound like a walking, talking, texting, flailing Democrat commercial for the state. What responsibility do state leaders and healthcare systems have to prevent entire rural communities from losing access to prenatal maternity care? Jeff would love to hear what our candidates have in mind. They just say, you don't have enough. Well, the problem with rural healthcare is you just don't have, there's not enough customers there. Are not enough customers who, I mean, these hospitals that are closing, that's it. You don't have any cash flow. And there's this idea that if you put insurance cards, expand Medicaid into people's pocket, they'll go to the hospital, which isn't necessarily true either, which I've always questioned. Well, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Borst Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Mona tried to tell me to stay away from the train line. She said that all the railroad men just drink up your blood like wine.